From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's time for our weekly listener mail, where we share stories from you with you. And today we have some really interesting stuff. We have some allegations of inside jobs. We have the concept of astrology, which we get asked about pretty frequently. So we're diving into that today. And then also a little story that has always fascinated me, and I think might fascinate you guys as well, about cryptids and extinction. So maybe we go in that order. What do you say, guys? We did an episode on GameStop. It was more than GameStop, Wall Street Bets involvement in what some would call a financial revolution or attempt at such. And this sparked a lot of interest from our fellow listeners.
Yeah, it did. Because I think it really, the whole GameStop thing just sort of pointed out something that we've all always kind of known, that the system is really designed for like the power players, you know, the top folks that have the most to gain and potentially the most to lose, but they don't like to lose. So when you got the little guys kind of rigging the system against them, they don't like that too much. And there's some potential for collusion and just not playing very fair. But in this whole GameStop situation, it certainly led to the question of like, who has the most to gain from this? This whole idea of short squeezing and shorting stocks, which inherently feels super divisive and controversial, the idea of betting on someone's failure. But hey, we're all big boys. We know what the stakes are. We get into business, you know, you win some, you lose some. And sometimes people can benefit from others' misfortune. It makes me a little squeamish, but it certainly is part of the game, whether you think it's icky or not. But we had specifically a listener call in to 1-833-STDWYTK. You can do that too if you wish. Just let us know what to call you and that we can use your story and try to stick to that 3 minutes if you can. But this one comes from our longtime listener, Agent L.
Hello, guys. It's Agent L here again. I was thinking about the whole GameStop short squeeze attempt and how obvious it seems that the creators of this idea were really only looking to make profit on the stock that they owned. I mean, the concept that they would squeeze these short sellers seems pretty ludicrous to me, because unless those short sellers were coming to the end of their term where they would have to repay that borrowed stock, then the idea that GameStop would have increased to such soaring limits for long enough that it would really hurt these hedge funds seems, again, ludicrous. I don't know how long ago it was, and I don't know if this is something you guys could find out, how long ago it was that the hedge funds started using GameStop as a short selling option. But it seems to me that the only benefit to this entire short squeeze attempt was to the ones who planned it, orchestrated it, and brought in the feeling of general ill will towards the hedge funds. And all of that Occupy Wall Street-esque feeling along with it. Interested to see what you guys think. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks, Agent L. It's an interesting question, and I want to make sure and check with you guys, Matt and Ben, that I'm understanding the question correctly, because he's implying some level of an inside job, but I'm not sure if he's implying that the executives at GameStop were the ones that were rigging the game, no pun intended.
Stop.
Pun totally intended. Ha ha, I won't, Ben, I can't, I couldn't possibly. Or that, I think what he's saying is that the people who were orchestrating the short squeeze from within this Wall Street Bets community were essentially just out to pump up the price of the stock that they already owned. And they weren't necessarily, couldn't possibly have predicted that it would do such egregious damage to the hedge funds that were so heavily invested in the shorting of the stock. Ooh. Is that what you guys took from that, or am I misreading it?
Somewhat. So I would say, yeah, this is a great question, Agent L. We know that Deep F***ing Value, aka Keith Gill, his name is out there now. We know that he was intensely interested in GameStop before this short selling run began. So that's why he was the person who had his, you know, ear to the financial ground and felt the tremors coming. But from what I understand, and this is a based on a lot of correspondence from our fellow listeners who have wrote into the show or contacted me directly, it feels like the beginning of it may have been organic, but there were opportunists who jumped on board, maybe with different motivations or some sort of ulterior motive, right? These folks are, you know, you'll see in the Wall Street Bets forums, you'll see people saying, like, people would jump in during a GameStop conversation and say, like, you know, the next GameStop is going to be this thing. And they're kind of like trying to move the crowd toward that thing that they obviously have already invested in. And then also, yeah, it's a great point, Noel, about the CEOs and the stock owners of GameStop who were able to profit from this, right? Depending on how their timing worked out. And it's also possible that, like, of course, in professional investment bankers, people who work at hedge funds are very well aware of stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, and maybe I'm being too extreme here, it feels like it would be somewhat naive to assume that they would not seize an opportunity if they thought such existed. And it's totally legal, by the way they did it. If they did.
Yeah, that's right. And Matt, I want to get your take, but I want to add too that, I mean, the history of this is that even a year before all this craziness went down, a lot of the folks hanging out on Wall Street Bets, they kind of were carrying a torch for GameStop, mm-hmm, in an interesting way, saying that, like, they felt like it was undervalued because these hedge funds were already starting to bet against it, like, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, because they felt like they were putting too much emphasis on their brick and mortar, you know, situation, and that gaming and game purchases is really migrating to a all digital realm, or as a little snippet of a big box store that is diversified and sells other stuff. Whereas GameStop's whole deal is that they're these tiny little brick and mortar stores that only sell video games. I guess you could argue that they, you know, it's the only place you can really trade games, but God, the value they give you on trade-ins is embarrassing.
It's a business.
I don't know. It is a business, but it's like, God, it's like you pay $65 for these games and they, you know, a pristine copy, they'll give you like 10, if that, and then they turn around and sell it for, you know, 50.
It's college bookstore rules, man.
That's it is college works. Bookstore rules. No, you're not wrong. But this guy, Ryan Cohen, kind of had the same idea where he was like, back in beginning of 2020, he was trying to convince the board. He invested a lot of money into the company in 2020, hoping to kind of push this digital first narrative onto the company and sort of suggest to them that, hey, you guys need to get with the times. I'm going to invest in you to show that I still believe in you, but you got to kind of change your business model. He actually wrote this in an SEC filing. GameStop needs to evolve into a technology company that delights gamers and delivers exceptional digital experiences, not remain a video game retailer that over-prioritizes its brick and mortar footprint and stumbles around the online ecosystem. Ouch. But yeah, essentially, GameStop still has a a relatively bright future, especially, I mean, obviously this was like a symbolic massive groundswell that wasn't necessarily tied to any real performance metrics, which is what makes me question the whole stock market and the idea of value or what is something actually worth. But there was a question I believe I asked on the episode we did, Ben, where it's like, what are these, what does this inflated price mean for the company? And it does apparently mean that they could, that they're actually going to be able to pay off some debts and use some of that profit to invest in some of these new directions that they might, you know, that might make them more viable, you know, in the world of the future, or like the, you know, 10 years ago. But Matt, what do you think about this? Do you think it's possible that there was some collusion outside of just the GameStonk kind of meme stock, you know, internet Reddit people that were like trying to make a stand in that kind of Occupy mindset way as protest, and then it just kind of ballooned out of control? Or is there something more, maybe not nefarious, but more calculated at play?
Well, I think there are always going to be people who are invested way more than any retail investor, who have more to gain and lose, right, for anything that occurs like this. And we talked about one person, Ryan Cohen, like you said. Yeah, at one point in January at the peak, his $75 million investment in GameStop stock was worth about $1.3 billion at the peak of it. And, you know, look at other billionaires. Credit Acceptance Corp. There's a person there, a man named Donald Foss, again, like, went from $12.5 million investment in GameStop stock at the peak, was around $1.5 billion worth. So, you know, when you've got investors and stakes at that level, you always have to question, well, what else was going on here? Mm-hmm. But as always, we're dealing in a weird realm where it's opinions, it's if you can get enough buzz going, if you can get enough people to think positively or negatively, you can completely change the fortunes of millions of other people. So,
and
I don't know.
Technology outpaced the typical, you know, stock market strategies, like the amount of nerd blood, sweat and tears put into knowing the information first and acting on it quickly. Is astonishing. Like if aliens came to this planet, they would probably be low key impressed with just how much time has been spent on that specifically. There would be other questions, like, what is your weird coupon system? Why do people die for it? Are you at all concerned about the future of water on your planet? But they would, at least, I think, like on the way back to the spaceship, they would go, you know, that whole Wall Street thing is pretty nifty. They've got some toys, man. But to your point, in defense of Ryan Cohen, he did not do what, you know, is often crassly called a pump and dump. In fact, he's continuing to lead a revamp, and they just poached an Amazon executive, former Amazon executive. So he is definitely, if he's definitely transparent about having a horse in the race. So I don't know if you could say he's conspiring. I feel like what we're with Agent L, and to your point about the billions of dollars, like what Agent L is touching on here is the idea that maybe folks from a hedge fund that was not like publicly in the fray as far as the over short selling, I feel like it is completely plausible that someone working there saw what was going down and calculated some sort of opportunity. And then, of course, if you already have GameStop stock, you love the stonk. Everybody invest, get that buzz.
Put some stonk on it. No, and it's true. I mean, like so many of these investors, these high-level investors, they have access to information that we don't have access to, whether it's through those Bloomberg terminals that cost like thousands of dollars to subscribe to and they give you like just the most up-to-date information. Or, I mean, you know, we say insider trading is illegal, you know, if you get caught, but I have a hard time believing that stuff doesn't happen like all the time, you know, in casual little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more type moments, you know.
Well, think about it this way. Did we talk about George Sherman yet? The CEO of GameStop at the time?
Great opportunity.
If you want to talk about an insider benefit, that maybe there was no, you know, there's no connection to anything else. You can only assume that over time he was gifted stock, you know, as part of his compensation. He also maybe was doing his own investing. Who knows? But he owned 2.36 million shares of GameStop. The CEO owned 2.36 million shares. So that went from 45 million to 1.13 billion, just like that. If you own that much stock personally, you can imagine that you would want something like this to happen. Mm-hmm. But who's to say that you could ever make something like that happen?
Well, that's a good, and also, God, what, talk about a red flag, or, I mean, you know, if he dumped that stock at its peak, I mean, as the CEO, he'd be run up the flagpole and crucified, you know, on the flagpole. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but I think you see where I'm coming from. And the same with this, the angel investor, this, like, whatever, what's the word? Activist investor, Cohen. Like, that's pretty cool. He could have sold. He was smart. He obviously wasn't a player in this. He just invested because he thought the company was undervalued and needed to move in a direction and was trying to use this money he had to influence maybe the board to move in that direction. But, you know, he could see that portfolio quadrupling, you know, septupling in value, and he didn't sell. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that, but I think that's the implication. Yeah, that's the implication for sure. So he obviously literally put his money where his mouth was. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting.
It's tricky because both of those individuals, like Cohen and Sherman, they are both at the helm of GameStop. Sherman is still the CEO. And so you could make the argument, yeah, it gets kind of tricky when you are a high-level executive in a company that you, you know, own a bunch of stock in. Like, the rules around when and how you can sell that stock or divest yourself from it are can get a little complex. So if I were looking for more of an inside job, or if the five of us, Doc, Noel, Matt, me, and you listening at home, if we were in charge of GameStop and we knew we could make a profit on this, right? But we also knew we needed to be legal. And the first thing I would look for is kind of a way to put it at a remove, you know, and maybe that's somebody else taking actions that were based on a conversation that we just casually had, right? Because a lot of times with conspiracies and a lot of times with financial conspiracies, the days of the shadowy, smoky back room are over. It's much, much more casual now. It's kind of like we're both at the barbecue. How was your week?
Yeah, pretty good. So do this now. Hurry. I want to just bring something up towards the end of this, Noel, something maybe that you can look into later, because I feel out of the loop with it. But there's a person named Bill Hwang, H-W-A-N-G, and Archegos. I think it's called Archegos. I don't know how to say it correctly. It's a Greek word. Really interesting story coming out about the collapse of this private, like, family-owned or family investment fund. It's kind of like a hedge fund, but just very small. And it doesn't require the same things from the SEC that some other big hedge fund requires. And there's some weird stuff going on there where this guy, Bill, like, borrowed a ton of money from a bunch of different lenders and then put it all into this huge hedge fund, essentially. And then it just tanked. And the guy also has a past with, I don't know if it was insider trading. I know he has a past of some weird stuff in his world. Anyway, it's worth looking into. It's just breaking right now.
Is it insider trading if you know this is a dumb question. I'm pretty sure the answer is yes. If you know something is going to happen that hasn't been fully announced, like maybe an acquisition of another company or a change in, like, trajectory or business strategy, and you know that,
and you act on that. You don't know how it's going to affect the stock, but you know, that's usually what affects stock is news items, like things like, oh, didn't get this government contract, or, you know, oh, they're changing to pivoting to a different, you know, industry even, or whatever. We went through this with a company that we were owned by called Blucora that had an interesting stock pump out of nowhere because of an announcement. If we had acted on that internally, that would have been insider trading, right?
Yeah, I believe that would have been the case. So while we none, oh, what are we supposed to say? Let's treat like Wall Street Bets. This is not financial advice.
No,
we just like the stock, diamond hands, etc. So insider trading. Here's maybe an example off the top of my head. Like let's say we're a defense contractor. We're Lockheed or something. And we know that because we are high muckety mucks in this world and at this organization, we know that things are going to be a little rough, maybe not an existential crisis, but they're going to be a little rough because we just lost the contract bidding process for the new foot slapping drone that is going to revolutionize people walking around barefoot, which is apparently a huge problem in this example. Anyway, moving on. If we know that and we know it before it is announced, and then we all go and dump our stocks suddenly, I think that's something the SEC will pay attention to. But keep in mind, you know, we can't be the only ones asking this question. How many cases does the SEC prosecute per year? The number is staggering. It's 50. That's it. Out of all financial transactions in the U.S., the SEC worries about, let's say, about 50 a year. They say, these aren't kosher.
What a lot of people don't understand is that the SEC is literally one person, and she works really hard.
Yes.
And
she's basically an intern.
Well, it's kind of like how the IRS is so, I would backlogged. Say, by design, understaffed.
Mm-hmm.
Think about who benefits from an under-resourced SEC and an under-resourced IRS. It's probably not you, folks. Spoiler alert. As a matter of fact, part of that is the way that laws are written, policies are written. So when we talk about insider trading at GameStop, let's talk about insiders in the financial system overall, because that's how it works, right? The old Carlin quote is a big club. You ain't in it. Yet, I hold out hope for everyone listening.
Well, I have to make this stock joke because it's too good and dad-like not to make, but you can call me the catcher in the rye because I'm Holden Caulfield. Get it? Holden, my stocks, Holden, diamond hands.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was trying to figure out if there was a stock called Caulfield that you...
it sounds like kind of like a company that would make soup or something. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, okay. This is interesting stuff. And it's obviously, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg with this kind of thing. And it's an iceberg that started kind of floating our way many years ago with the whole Occupy Wall Street thing. And like now we're actually seeing some activist, hacktivist kind of behavior that's really affecting people's pocketbooks. And it'll be interesting to see how, we didn't even mention the fact that, I'm sorry, there was a whole article I wanted to bring up, is that the hedge fund that lost more than 50% of its value because of the GameStop stock, you know, shorting situation, Melvin Capital, is being sued by 9 different retail investors who claimed that they initiated a conspiracy to limit trading that caused these retail investors to lose money. And that was because of their connection with apps like Robinhood that all of a sudden, oh, sorry, you can't get GameStop anymore. So we'll see how that goes. That's sort of the latest news, but plenty more to come and plenty more listener mail to come after this quick message break.
And we have returned. We're traveling internationally. Our next story today takes us to Australia, AKA one of the places we've always wanted to visit. Write to your local representatives, Australians. Tell them to have our show go there. I don't know how the Australian government works. I don't know if they do that. But, you know, give it a shot. It's an email. Here is a fantastic letter from Paul W. in Australia who asked about something that has fascinated me for a long time, and I think a lot of our fellow listeners. Let's hit the letter first, and then let's get weird with it. I mean, super weird. Good day, fellas. That's Paul, not me. I'm not stereotyping here. My name is Paul, and I think your show is awesome. Your efforts are reflected by the quality of your podcast that I really enjoy, for which I thank you. So that kind of line, I don't know about you guys, but that kind of line always gets me like a little cautious. Is there going to be a butt?
There's a butt. There's a big one.
Right?
There might be a butt. There's always a butt. Not always, but.
There isn't. This is a butt-free email. So, Paul, you said, stuff they don't want you to know keeps me alert at work as a delivery driver, which offers me a little extra scratch since retiring from a long career in the Australian Army as a field medic. I live in Wollongong, and thank you for telling us how to pronounce that, which is about 70 kilometers south of Sydney as the Thunderbird flies, and I love all things cryptid. I believe your listeners may be interested in the mystery that surrounds the Tasmanian tiger. I don't know if you can classify this critter as a cryptid because it was or is a real thing that officially went extinct in the 1930s. However, sightings of this creature have been recorded since the 30s up until recently in Tasmania and on the mainland of Australia. Something like 90% of Tasmania is dense, impenetrable bushland, so I believe labeling this carnivorous marsupial extinct may be a little presumptuous. Anyway, that's my opinion. Keep up the great work. P.S. Next time you see Jono, please tell him that I love my Quister hoodie. That's a little bit of an Easter egg there for our awesome complaint department and the creator of Tech Stuff, who appears in his alter ego on another show we do called Ridiculous History.
It's true.
Did not know he has hoodies, but that's awesome.
I didn't know. Do we even have hoodies? Are we able to print hoodies? Is this a special arrangement?
I think we can. Quister? Maybe he's just got that quiz pull. But Paul, this letter made my day because of a couple of different factors. But I wanted to check Matt, Noel, with you guys first. Have you done much reading about the Tasmanian tiger in specific?
Not since we talked about it on one of the cryptid things that we did, Ben, that I can't recall. But we mentioned just how cool of a creature it was. So I'm excited to hear what you've learned.
I just know the Tasmanian devil from Looney Tunes fame. What's the Tasmanian tiger look like? I don't recall this guy. I'm Googling him right now.
Let's see. More like a canine to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Or like a hyena almost.
Yeah, it's like a dog with tiger stripes. Expanding at its hind quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on, I just
lost. A little vaguely dingo-like, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was a recent news piece that claimed, it was earlier this year, that claimed the Tasmanian tiger had been sighted, had been spotted in the wild. This claim, which came around in, I think, February or so, all can be attributed to a guy on YouTube named Neil Waters, who says that they had seen not just one thylacine, which would be the name of a Tasmanian tiger when it has its suit and tie on, but he said he saw an entire family. And he said he had footage here as well. As you know, we always want to look into the sources here. Neil Waters does have a thylacine in the race here because he is the president of something called the Thylacine Awareness Group of Australia. So he very much believes they're out there, very much wants us to be aware of this. The story of the Tasmanian tiger is, it's pretty tragic in no small part because the last one, you're right, Paul, did die in the 30s. His name was Benjamin. He died in a zoo, so he was in animal jail. And ever since then, more than 80 years since, people have consistently been reporting sightings of what they believe to be Tasmanian tigers. And what's important about what Waters says is that he thought he also saw a juvenile, a baby, meaning that there was a breeding population. This video went relatively viral. He said that he handed images of the thylacine over to an expert named Nick Mooney at the Tasmanian Museum and Art Gallery. And surprise, surprise, not everybody agreed on what it was. We're going to give you another animal to check out in your browser of choice, and that is something called the Tasmanian Pademelon, which I may be mispronouncing. Pademelon? Let us know, Australians. So people are saying that this guy definitely did not see an animal long suspected to be extinct. And if you look up this, if you look up the picture of this other creature, Pademelon, that's, it looks kind of like a quokka, I think they're called. If you look up this creature, that's what the skeptics are saying Waters actually saw. And if you guys see just an image of this, I think you would agree, it doesn't really look like a Tasmanian tiger, does it?
No, not so much.
Yeah. It's a little very cute, very Pixar, very Disney. It's a little bottom heavy because it is still, you know, it's a marsupial. So it has to carry its young for a time.
It looks like a kangaroo and a mouse, just like
a kangaroo, a mouse-a-roo. I like mouse-a-roo. It's pretty small. It's only about 16 pounds. It's about a meter and a half in length. I guess you could mistake it for a Tasmanian tiger, but to be fair, you could easily mistake just something moving in the bush for one of these supposedly extinct creatures, especially if you wanted to see one, if you wanted it to be true. The thing that gets me about this, even though people disagree with this specific claim, is not just the preponderance of alleged sightings, but it's the fact that animals can be lost and rediscovered. Like the good old example, the most famous example, the coelacanth, right? That guy was quote unquote extinct for what, millions of years while he was just living his happy, objectively kind of ugly life in a river.
Yeah. Well, just different. The coelacanth is just different.
Just different. You're right. We can't apply surface level assumptions, right, on multiple levels to this guy. But the thylacine too is it just looks adorable. I'll be honest with you. It also looks so much like a canid of some sort that it could. I could imagine somebody seeing a dog, maybe without optimal viewing conditions, and thinking, like being certain they had seen a Tasmanian tiger. I just want them to not be extinct. You know what I mean? I want them to be around. If you look at Tasmania itself, yes, it is possible that they're around. But I think in our last episode on this, when we talked about Tasmanian tigers earlier, we had all agreed they would count as a cryptid, right? Under coelacanth rules.
For sure. This would be a cryptid. Right. I'm looking at that video now that Neil Waters, you were talking about, posted of these images he took. I don't know, man. I'm on the fence here, whether it's a pademelon or a thylacine, which is, God, pademelon xylophane. That's going to be a hook somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. It's the new track by Hoot God. We're bringing that character back. I wondered, I don't know. Like, so you're on the fence, Matt. Noel, what do you think? Is it possible? Or is it wish?
It doesn't feel like it. I don't know. Every time we have these cryptid conversations, I mean, the last one we had, Matt, that you brought was about the really big dire wolf looking things that like dragged a cow over a guardrail. And it always ends up being the little detail of, well, it was at night, there was distance, there's a shadow, you might have mistaken it for, you know, something else. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's what's happening here. Now, the big wolf's dragging a deer, it was not a cow, it was a deer, over a guardrail, much more convincing than just like seeing a thing from a distance and saying, oh, that's definitely this animal. So,
but that was just a story.
I know what it was, but it was
this
a convincing
guy
story.
Waters has some videos, he's got trail cameras, he's got images. I don't know,
where are they, where are they at, man? Let me see him.
He's posting them on YouTube right now.
Left,
they're not there yet though, are they?
Yeah
Well, there is another thing here that gets me. As far as I know, one of the most I guess like the simple low-hanging fruit step in a search for a cryptid is kind of gross, but it's necessary. Find the poop. You know what I mean? Find the habitat. Find the scratching, if there's some like behavior like that. And we did in a previous episode, we did some like cocktail napkin math about Bigfoot. And we said, okay, the Australopithecus is extinct, but that's the, you know, the biggest primate we know of. What about the current largest primate, right? What kind of, we've been really into guts lately. What kind of poop do they make? Where do they make? How does it work? You know, how often does it happen? How much is there? How much do they have to eat? Looking for a physical animal, that seems like that would be a trace they would inevitably have to leave. And to my knowledge, that has not been found. Nobody's seen Tasmanian tiger poop, you know, the fresh baked kind, since 1936. So I think it's possible, but I'm super biased because I want it to be true. And then also, even if it is true, if there is some relic population, as they would be called, they probably don't have the genetic diversity to continue as a species. If they exist, the odds are not great that they will have enough of a breeding population to beat a genetic bottleneck that would ultimately doom them.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing is, for all of us with just a casual interest in this, when, you know, Waters or whoever else comes out with incontrovertible images or video or some kind of evidence of a Tasmanian tiger living right now, it will make the news, because that is big news. It'll hit MSN or whatever you're checking every once in a while, and then we'll know for sure, one way or the other. Well, actually, if we don't have proof, then we won't know, and it'll always be a mystery. So maybe let's just keep it like that.
Are you saying the real Tasmanian tiger was the friends we made along the way?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And, you know, it's a story that's not going to go away for the foreseeable future, as long as there is dense wilderness in Tasmania. People like me will hold out, hoping against hope, that we see the return of this fauna, especially in this time of a great mass extinction. We are living through an era of history in the most unpleasant way. But with that being said, if you've seen a Tasmanian tiger, if you have a Tasmanian tiger, if you are a Tasmanian tiger, somehow able to operate a keyboard or a phone, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your experience. Although I don't think any of us speak tiger, we will get Duolingo. We'll pick that stuff up and do well enough to understand you.
Ben, by the way, before we leave, I found a video on that YouTube channel that we were talking about, Thylacine Awareness Group of Australia. The title is Searching for Tassie Tiger Poop.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He gets all about it. That poop. Where's the poop, right?
It's it. Where's the poop?
There's a big turd on the thumbnail, so I don't know.
Right. Does it have little stink lines coming off of it and like little flies, like animated?
No.
And then how do you tell, like, how do you dissect that? Oh, gosh. Okay. This is
smell and taste. That's really the only. Oh, well. So I would do it, I guess.
So that's
he's got experience in these matters, Matthew.
Yeah. So that search continues. Please let us know your experience. Please let us know your opinion on not just that, but any other cryptids in your neck of the global woods. We'll return to this story in the future. But for now, we're going to take a break for a word from our sponsors, and we'll return with one more story from you.
And we are back. Now we are going to hear another voicemail from one of you, and it's covering a topic that has been, I want to say this nicely, it's been consuming my wife a little bit, and I'm have a growing interest in this now because of her interest, and I can't wait to talk about it. So let's jump to the voicemail from Stephanie.
Hey guys, this is Stephanie from California. Idea for a topic just popped into my head, and I'm sure you guys have gotten other requests for it. I'm fairly certain haven't been covered in the backlog. And the topic is astrology. My dad, when I was younger, his best friend and like business partner for his construction and painting company used to print out astrology charts, and they did astrology like hardcore. I mean, like, I remember he had like binders and binders of these astrology charts. And my mom and him both kind of believed in this stuff. And they would talk about how it was, like, affecting the planet and, like, I don't know, something was going on and, like, with the planet. They'd be like, oh, like, it's affecting the Earth and X, Y, and Z. Like, kind of in the sense of affecting people's feelings and emotions. I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that, but I kind of kept myself a little bit more removed from it. But anyway, I don't even know where he got the charts, but I know there has to be more people that do stuff like tracking it. I don't know how common it is, but anyway, and I guess that might tie into with like astrological signs and how that's all changed. I mean, I remember reading an article NASA sent out that was like, everything's been moved a lot, and yes, it still doesn't actually affect you at all. So I remember when that article was written because it kind of cracked me up. So anyway, want to throw that idea out there. I really love listening to you guys. I've called in before, and I apologize. This is like my second call to you guys this weekend. But I thought this was would be a really cool topic to hear about, because I don't even really understand why my dad did it besides having a belief system like that. So I'd love to hear more about it if you guys ever get a chance to do the topic. Looking forward to your next episodes. All right. Love you guys. Bye.
Nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was really great. What a nice send-off there right at the end. So thank you, Stephanie, for sending us that voicemail, for, you know, getting us to talk about this topic, astrology and horoscopes and what's going on in the stars. And can that have any effect on us little humans way down here, the bacteria on this rock just scooting around? Well, maybe a lot of people believe that there's some kind of connection between the stars and humans and life itself on the Earth. Science is a little more skeptical about it, as you could probably imagine, but it's something that we can talk about. And I figured, why not start at the place where most people learn about astrology for the first time? And for me, that was through horoscopes. I wonder if that was the same experience you had, Ben.
Yes, but not Western horoscopes. I had my introduction to the concept came from Chinese astrology and horoscopes, which,
oh, cool,
is a different system. And then I used to have, I shared this with you back in the day. Remember when I had that program that would calculate your Mayan astrological sign? Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm, your Mayan horoscope. That was really fascinating to me, at least, because in that belief system, it's much less like kid gloves, believe in yourself, than a lot of other astrological systems, because there were, in some Mesoamerican cultures, you know, there's no belief in accident, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to conflate the Aztec and the Maya, but there was this idea that if you, for instance, were out on a hunting trip and you accidentally killed one of your colleagues or injured them, you would be punished as though you had planned to do so and did it on purpose. And when you read the Mayan horoscopes, it is possible simply to be born on a cursed day, and you will, whoa, get, instead of something like, oh, you're incredibly special because sometimes you want to do things and you do them, and then sometimes you want to do things and you don't. Watch out for red shoes or something like that. The other horoscopes are just like, the person born on this day is unlucky and has committed sins in the past, and therefore they're here for punishment, things like that.
Anything they do is cannot redeem this. Wow, yeah. That's intense. I was giving a spotlight for any video viewers that can see this on my Mayan calendar back there, just because I thought it was
funny.
Ben, I'm gonna read you a Leo horoscope for right now, for today,
as we're recording this.
Oh, so this is for all of us then, because in the Western system, all three of us are considered Leos, I believe.
That's correct.
The current version, there is a 13th astrological sign, or there was. Weird story.
We're going to get to that. So here it is. You ready? For all you Leos out there, including us, March 30th, 2021, according to horoscope.com, money that you may have been hoping to use to better your living or working condition could suddenly come your way today, Leo. Ideas for how to put it to work in the most efficient, satisfying way could pop into your mind quickly. You'll probably want to write them down. Consider your options carefully and then choose the ones that suit your needs best. Go to it.
Okay.
So you could make some money today that you've been trying to get, and you could have an idea about how to use it, mm-hmm. but you should write it down.
And don't
congratulations.
Delay. Hey, congratulations to you, bro. Nice. this is an example. I don't know. I think I may have talked about this before, but I used to have a gig freelancing where I wrote horoscopes for a very small paper. And, I did due diligence, right? They just mm-hmm. wanted reports on what are called the sun signs, and you mm-hmm. get 12 per issue. And, you know, I would do little things like have Halloween themed horoscopes, things like that. Very fun to write. But I got a lot of correspondence that really surprised me when people were saying things like, you know, thank goodness I read this. It was incredibly helpful in one way or another. And there we go into the nature of belief. Because if you believe something works and you're not harming yourself and you're not harming other people, then full power to you, you know? Stephanie, I know we're taking a second to get to your questions.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, but we're fascinated by this. We have been fascinated by these systems, Western and non-Western, for a long time. I have a theory, Matt, Noel, Doc, that I think could just possibly, many asterisks, possibly explain the mechanism through which the stars and the heavens and the movements of the planets could maybe affect the human mind. And I tried to be really rational about it, and I tried to, you know, be open-minded. First, we don't really understand how gravity works. We know what it does, but that's it. We don't understand a whole lot about gravity. We also don't understand a ton about the human brain in certain aspects. And we don't understand a ton about the development of a human in the embryonic stage, right? We still have questions regarding things like the nature of consciousness. Perfect. Yes. How does consciousness form? When, why, to what degree? And then also we don't even really know what will happen if a child is conceived and birthed in space. They're evolved. What I'm saying, they're evolved for a very specific gravitational environment. And we know that the actions or the movements of non-terrestrial objects can, to a degree, have a gravitational effect on this planet and all the things living on it. So is it, I know we're walking a very like tapering branch.
This is great, Ben. The tapering branch is exactly where we need to be, because I've got something to share with you.
Awesome.
That okay. I don't think you've heard this yet.
Okay. Well, just sew it up real quick. Is it possible? Like if the moon can affect tides, right? That is a given, that is proven. Is it possible that massive objects can exert some kind of very small gravitational effect on the planet? And then is it possible that that gravitational effect could somehow influence formative stages of the human brain in what we would later call, you know, personality or consciousness? I have no proof of this. This was like literally me several years ago, probably like two beers deep, thinking about
five. Maybe,
maybe by the time I got to like, oh, what if? Maybe it was five. Who knows? But so that's how I tried to explain some of this stuff to myself. We know that tons of people use astrological services. Now you can get them in the forms of apps. but also may print out these charts in an attempt to get a better understanding of themselves, their loved ones, an idea of when they should do something or what they should do. We know that a lot of world leaders have been influenced by this. The military junta of Myanmar relocated their capital some years back on the advice of an astrologer. And Ronald Reagan had an astrologer. People from all walks of life, is what I'm saying, believe in and practice this.
That's correct. And I want you to hear this, Ben, and everyone listening. We had a question in there or a comment in there from Stephanie about kind of predictions, one of the reasons that you would have charts and everything to kind of get a sense of what may be coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, astrology.com, we went to horoscope.com, now we're at astrology.com. They posted in December 31st, 2020, an article called 2021 Astrology Predictions, Welcome to the Age of Lightspeed Change. Okay, you can find this. It's by a person named Gray, G-R-A-Y, Crawford. In this, there's one thing that I'm going to point to, and it doesn't mean that the whole thing is correct, but this one thing is pretty astounding.
Hmm.
I'm going to read you part of the first paragraph, and then I'm going to jump down. The year 2021 enters with the propulsive force of a new era announcing itself. As the immense impact of the great conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn in Aquarius ripples outward, while we had to grieve the end of an old era in 2020 while enduring difficult birth contractions collectively, the astrology of 2021 will require continuously adapting to the far-reaching changes that will be erupting across all aspects of society. The closeness of Jupiter and Saturn in the sky at the beginning of the year will serve as a guiding star of hope for creating the reforms and innovative solutions needed to address the numerous societal issues and inequities that have been exposed during the past year of the global pandemic. Now, I'm jumping down a few paragraphs here. Mm. Are you ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
January begins with a big bang, as Mars will enter Taurus on January 6th. And spend the rest of the month amplifying the volatile tensions brewing between Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus. There will...
I'm just laughing because it was. I was delighted when you were like, we're not going to straight up say anus on the show today.
I know. I had to... But January 6th. What happened on January 6th, Ben?
Well, the U.S. Capitol was stormed for the first time in a long, long time. And it was thoroughly stormed, right?
And yeah, and just conceptually, Mars entering Taurus. I don't know. There's something about that. That's crazy to me. That's crazy.
Yeah. So the idea then is, to what degree can astrological practices predict real world events on a macro or micro scale? People definitely do believe this, and there are numerous historical examples, right? The thing about astrology is, whether you consider yourself more skeptical, whether you consider yourself a true believer, you can easily admit that multiple cultures across the world and across time independently either invented this or discovered this. Invented or discovered some version thereof. And your verb choice there depends on your personal beliefs, I would argue. Yeah, that is a coincidence. That's a
one. Babe, is there such thing as coincidence, bro? That's right. Like part of the conspiracy mantra, the conspiracy realism. Like, it's weird to me that we can, that my brain cognitively can have this belief that there really is no coincidence. Like, it's tough to really get a good coincidence that didn't have some kind of guiding hand way in the background, even, or just, you know, immediately in the front of whatever action occurred. But I have that belief.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, this astrology and prediction in this way using the stars or charts feels like hogwash to me. That's my personal opinion. It feels like pseudoscience to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of scientists and researchers and educated individuals out there at those upper echelons would probably agree with that. especially those at NASA, if you talk to the people who deal with space a lot, they put out, there's a Time article that you can read. And it is, NASA has no time for your astrology nonsense. That's the Time article that you can read. Yeah, pretty,
That's actually from NASA?
That is from Time.
Oh, okay. No, okay. Now I understand. Yeah. That's not a quote from NASA.
Yeah.
they didn't put out that press release. All right.
No, they did not. They just say, they let everyone down pretty gently. There are other great places you can go to that say the same kind of thing. There's a website with Berkeley, the College of Berkeley. The website is Understanding Science. Let's see. I think it's undsci.berkeley.edu. They've got a really great little snapshot on their website where it just talks to you about, well, you know, is astrology, is it scientific or not? It's almost like, it looks like a workbook that you would find, you know, in grade school or something, but it's pretty great because it just gives you these bullet points of like, well, here's why a lot of people don't think it's scientific. Here's why a lot of people believe in it. I really, really appreciate what they did there.
Is there any particular point there that really swayed you away from or toward your hogwash position?
It's more in that it's impossible right now, at least to the best of our understanding, it's impossible to test things in astrology.
Possible, but it's illegal. There are a couple ways to do it, but there would be human experimentation, right?
Okay.
Longitudinal study.
Get
people from the same genetic background, make all the variables except for birth time and location as close to uniform as you can.
Yeah.
And then somehow I'm trying to say this without sounding like a supervillain, somehow ensure that children are born at this exact schedule so that you can shift the variable. We shouldn't do this. This is not,
let's not do this. Let's
this
not do
is this. Not a good look. I don't think that's the right step. But yeah, it's true. There's a lot of stuff we don't know. Human beings often are so good at making patterns. Funny story, folks. And we were just talking about this earlier this morning. So good at recognizing patterns because it was an evolutionary necessity before humans became the apex predator. This stays with every human being. You are a pattern analyzing master. And it's easy sometimes, dangerously easy, for people to create a pattern in their head while they're searching to discover one. Doesn't mean that people are practicing astrology in some cynical way or bad faith. I think all of us in the audience know at least a few people who are very well read in one of these systems or another and very much believe it. And I would say, out of context, this will sound weird, but in defense of astrology, Matt, I propose that it functions as a, at times, profound tool for psychological inventory. You know what I mean? You're learning about how you react to this information, and that's valuable.
Yeah, and it's exactly. And at least in the Western style of things like horoscopes and checking your charts and things on some of those apps you mentioned, it seems to have a profound positive effect on the individual because it's almost always encouraging.
Right.
Yes. At least what I've encountered. So again, like if you can use it in that way, even if you don't necessarily believe that it has an actual one-to-one relationship with what's going to occur in your life, if you can use it in a way to enhance your life, then geez, that's amazing. And I'm also not poo-pooing astrology. I'm telling you what I believe just currently. Like, I hope everybody understands that.
Oh, totally.
But you know, if you're really into it and you're interested and you want to learn more, there's a place you can go online called astrologyuniversity.com and you can get a degree. There are programs of study there. There are all kinds. Yeah, I don't know how much it costs. It may be really expensive. I have no idea. I'm not promoting them, but you can go there and you can do a 4-year training program if you want and, you know, be the best astrologer you can.
I think that's a cool thing. I don't know about you all, But I always enjoy it when my friends get super into a niche thing and have expertise over that. You know, it's such an amazing thing to learn about people. You know, once we're on the other side of this particular pandemic, before the next pandemic comes, we're going to have so many great conversations with people who have picked up some like really weird knowledge in their time in quarantine. And it's like, hey, how are you or how's it going? Is such a loaded question nowadays. But imagine how cool it's going to be when you can ask one of your friends, so, hey, I haven't seen you for over a year. What'd you get into? And like, well, you know, I was putting together a model train for my kid on Christmas. People still do that. And now I know everything about trains in the 1800s. Oh. Everything. Ask me anything. Track gauge, the dangers of steam.
And well, what have you been up to? Oh, I'm a Reiki master now. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, if anyone knows anything about Reiki, I'm super interested. Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk with somebody. Just reach out. I'd love to know. Just can you actually do it through this? Like, can you Reiki energy through a camera into somebody's body and then back to the camera?
The way you can send vibes if you're a televangelist.
Yeah. Like, can you do that? I'm not saying you can or can't. I'm just interested. Anyway, same thing with a lot of these, a lot of the things that are occurring in this new always online kind of environment. Can you transfer something electronically in that way?
Sigils, astrology, Reiki. Well, I guess astrology is different because you're encountering the information in a mundane way. You're reading it, right? And it's proven that people can read. What would another one be? Acupuncture wouldn't work. You have to be physically there.
Yeah.
Hypnosis, maybe? Could you hypnotize people? That's completely different. I think that's a little too different.
Yeah, does the low quality mono audio of a Zoom call like this, does it allow for hypnosis? I don't know.
Is this probably an option somewhere in preferences where you can check enable hypnosis? Preferences on these things are crazy. But but yeah, to your point, Stephanie, people do, like I personally know some people who create astrological charts and they're very by the book. They're very in depth. They're the kind of people who will get a little annoyed if they say, hey, I want to do your astrological chart. And you say, all right, I was born sometime in August, such and such. And they'll say, that's not enough. I need the exact time. I need the hospitals or, you know, the coordinates, the latitude and longitude. And then if you make the mistake of saying, well, what does that matter? Then the answer you'll get is it all matters. And the reason that some people are much more skeptical about astrology is because, simply put, the belief is they're doing it wrong. Mm. I don't know. The issue is, if I'm assuming the skeptical side, the issue is here that if this understanding were sound, reproducible, and everybody agreed this was so, then it would be the kind of technology that would always be used by corporations and governments and various other institutions, right? Like banks would time stuff based on what they were able to divine from the stars. Maybe they are, and maybe we just don't know. I mean, we gave two examples of governments and government figures that did consider astrology when making policy decisions, but that doesn't seem to be the case for everybody. I don't know, man. Maybe there's a secret cabal of astrologers. They're the real power in the world.
I don't know, man. So we started this segment with a horoscope for Leos, right? From horoscope.com. I'm going to end with a sentence from the astrology.com horoscope for March 30th, 2021 for Leos. You ready? I think it is specifically aimed at us. An electric opposition with Uranus brings forth downloads at lightning speed, Leo.
Wild. Yeah. Oh, also the one thing a lot of people probably waiting for us to bring up, why are so many horoscopes from one source or another so very different on a given day? You know what I mean? It's a fair question to ask.
I really thought the opposition of Uranus bringing forth downloads was going to make you laugh, Ben, and I'm sorry it didn't.
No, I took it seriously. I'm trying not to constantly crack up at this. I do have to ask, Matt, and I apologize if this is a dumb question. What does that mean exactly?
It's going to bring forth downloads, baby, at lightning speed. And there's an opposition with Uranus. So I don't know. Something to do with that. So, and it's electric too. So,
oh, I did have some Wi-Fi problems when last we recorded. Is that it? Are the stars speaking to us about fixing our Wi-Fi?
I don't know, dude. Just tune into your intuition, especially while today's moon sails through your astral fourth house of roots, innermost feelings, and emotional awareness. So, you know.
That speaks to me. I got to tell you, I was looking up some horoscopes just to see differences between the ones from March 30th as we record this. And I know everybody's saying, it's so Leo of you guys to just do Leo horoscopes. Read mine, you know, read Aquarius, read Taurus, etc. There was one that made me nervous because it was like, this might sound like something to laugh about, but be extra cautious around your boss today.
Really?
Which I never want to hear. No one wants to hear that.
You know what it says as the daily bonus for us, Ben?
Mm.
Money changes everything, especially when you don't have it. Watch your cash.
So, okay, another financial thing. So maybe there's a, certainly there's a matter of people doing these readings, drawing these charts, and then putting it in their own kind of framework or their own sort of presentational style. So the argument would be that skeptics are objecting to interpretation, not sure. To the factual basis. But again, I think it's cool. You're not hurting people. Do be aware though that the story Matt and I mentioned earlier about a 13th astrological sign in the West is very much true. So this system did change, right, over time.
It did. Well, hey, we've gone way too long, Ben. We got to end it right here. Oh, good Lord. In this episode, the pollen in Atlanta right now has just covered everything. My God. And it is hitting me really hard today. I'm so sorry. I can feel my nose running. It's disgusting. Wait a second. We've got something here from Doc Holliday.
Doc says, we're telling you out so bad. Doc says, I don't really believe in these. Well, let me get my Libra horoscope after the episode. What do you say, Matt?
No, we got to do it right now. Air? Yep.
All right.
Let's go. Do you want to go to horoscopes.com or what? Go to one. I'm going to go to astrology.com.
I'm going to type in best horoscopes. We'll see where that takes us.
All right. I'm going to start here. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Doc, as a Libra, you're cosmically guided by the bond-building planet Venus. Today's skies see Venus in a well-supported alignment with stable Saturn, helping you ground down and explore realistic opportunities for connection on the romantic front. It's an ideal day to bring people on board with your creative personal projects or to have a serious conversation about a relationship's future, as an air of commitment and follow-through is present.
Aw. Yeah, that's a nice one. I like that. I am over at something called astrotalk.com. Let's see what they have to say. Oh, no, wait. No, let's go to a better one. This is weird. Okay.
Whoa. At the end of this one, it's talking about, again, opposition to electric Uranus in your erotic eighth house. This is, I don't understand some of these.
Dude, Uranus is blowing up these days, huh? All right. As you said, Matt, horoscope.com. This horoscope says, Doc Holliday. That's weird. They have your name in here. Mm. Doc Holliday, information received today excites your imagination and encourages you to start a new artistic or creative project. Stories, pictures, abstract concepts, all could come together in your mind and form an inspired idea that could change your life. So gird your loins, write down your thoughts, and see where it all takes you. You might be surprised by what you produce.
Mm, amazing.
Interesting.
Here's the last part from mine, just to tack on to Ben's, because I think it's perfect. It says, Dear Libra, your effort is much appreciated in your line of work. It's time for you to fully appreciate what you have to bring to the table, too. We couldn't agree more.
Heck yeah. What a great place to end. This, we ended on a positive note. Thank you, as always, everybody, for tuning in. That's our show for today. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you take a page from your fellow listeners, Stephanie, Paul, Agent L, and everybody else who has written in, who has called us, who has reached out to us as a show or directly. As always, we cannot wait to hear from you. We try to be very easy to find online.
That's right. You can reach us on all the usual social media locations of note. We've got the Facebook. We've got the Twitter, where we're Conspiracy Stuff. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
And if you're not that kind of social person and you want to use your phone, you know, the voice part of it where you can talk to people, you can talk to us. You can leave us a voicemail. We have a number. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message. You got 3 minutes. At the very top, please tell us your name or what you'd like for us to call you. That's very helpful there. Let us know if we can use your voice on the air. We would love to if we can. And then leave us a message. Afterwards, you know, you've got the most important things out of the way there. You can then give us a personal message. You can put it right at the end there. Hey, and if you've got a lot to say, remember, you can always fit more stuff in an email, and we've got one of those addresses. You can send us longer messages to our email address. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.